After months of anticipation, the 2014 race for governor is heating up. On September 9th, Rodin voters will decide the Democratic and Republican primaries for governor, along with a host of other campaigns. Meanwhile, the General Assembly is heading into the home stretch of its 2014 session. Voters are also getting ready to pick a new mayor of Providence, and all this as Rodin still suffers from the nation's highest unemployment rate and still faces the long shadow of 38 studios. These are some of the topics we'll be exploring tonight during Policy and Pino, Rhode Island Public Radio's ongoing discussion series of leading state issues. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis, and I'd like to introduce our panel. On the far right, a place where he rarely finds himself, a man who needs no introduction, that walking encyclopedia of Rhode Island politics, our political analyst, Scott McKay.
Thank you, Ian.
Sitting to Scott's left is physician, educator, talk show host, and Rhode Island Public Radio board member, Pablo Rodriguez. ¿Qué tal, Pablo?
Saludos, amigos.
And closest to me is University of Rhode Island political science professor and a regular panelist on our weekly political roundtable, Maureen Moakley. Nice to see you, Maureen.
It's very nice to be here.
Let's start by looking at the Democratic primary field for governor. There are three major candidates who are probably well known to most of you. Those include Providence Mayor Angel Taveras, State Treasurer Gina Raimondo, and Clay Pell, someone with a well-known last name in Rhode Island. Let's start it off with Scott McKay here. Scott, how would you delineate the main differences between these three Democrats vying to be the state's next governor?
Well, I'm struck by the difference in experience in a gubernatorial history that we have three Harvard graduates, believe it or not, no one from Brown, running for governor in the Democratic primary. Pell is the only person in this primary who has military experience. He's very young. He's new to the campaign trail. Again, he was a Coast Guard. He has experience in the White House as an aide and, of course, working for Tom Donilon, the Rhode Islander who ran the National Security Council. I think he's a young man of promise, but the one thing about him is he's never been elected to anything. The other two candidates are interesting to me because they're not bruised and battered old Democrats. Gina Raimondo, again, is in her first term as the general treasurer, and Angel Taveras in his first term as Providence mayor. I almost compare this to the old hedgehog and the fox. Raimondo knows one big thing, and she did one big thing really well, and that was the pension overhaul. Taveras is mayor of Providence, basically had to spend a lot of time bailing out a very leaky boat.
Okay, let's go here to Maureen Moakley. Maureen, as Scott is saying, there is some similarity in background between these three Democrats. How do you break down how they're similar and different?
Well, I mean, I think they're all very well equipped and very intelligent. I think they are centrist. I think they understand the problem is the economy. And so they're, with the exception of Clay Pell, they're kind of middle of the road in terms of their policies and so forth. The big differences I see are money and experience and demography. Obviously, Gina Raimondo has a lot of money, has acquired quite a war chest. Clay Pell is self-funded. He's just put in another $1 million, so he's got a $2 million war chest. And, of course, Angel Taveras is trailing. I think he has enough. But when it comes to demography, the thing I think Angel Taveras has is he's got an urban base. And most people don't understand that in a high turnout election, a primary election, and we expect this to be a high turnout election, it could go as high as 120,000 votes, all right? 40% of those votes come out of Providence, East Providence, Pawtucket, North Providence. So he's got a base there that can make a big difference and make up for some of the lack of funding.
All right, let's go here to Pablo Rodriguez. Pablo, how do you break? Do you see any really jagged differences between these three Democrats as they start to head into the beginning of the home stretch?
Oh, absolutely. I think that if you are going to place them in the order of left versus right, you have Gina Raimondo being closer to a right of center Angel Taveras really represents the center, and Clay Pell, the extreme left of the Democratic Party, by virtue of the people that are supporting them and that are pushing them for this race. I think Maureen is very, very much right about elections in a primary that is going to be largely urban. And it reminds me of Mirth York versus Sheldon Whitehouse. When Sheldon Whitehouse ran for this post, he won every town in Rhode Island except Providence. Mirth York won Providence with an overwhelming majority, and she became the nominee for the party. So it's going to be determined by the urban vote.
Now let's stay here with Pablo Rodriguez. Pablo, as we know, jobs and the economy would seem to be the paramount issue in Rhode Island. What do you see in the policy proposals from Raimondo Taveras and Pell as far as what they would do? Do you think one has better or worse ideas for improving Rhode Island's economy?
I think they all have, you know, very interesting ideas. All of them are talking about education. All of them are talking of partnerships between the higher education institutions in Rhode Island, which are really tremendous, and industry, and how they all can work together to increase jobs. The difference that I see largely is with Raimondo is that her proposals are a little bit more worked out, more detailed in terms of how a partnership with manufacturing, for example, would be created.
Let's go back here to Maureen Moakley. Maureen, how do you evaluate the economic proposals from the three Democratic candidates for governor?
Look, I think they're all quite thoughtful, and I would say that Angel Taveras has also worked out some things, particularly when it comes to pre-kindergarten and some other issues like that. My problem is this. They are smart, intelligent ideas, but they're thin on how we're going to pay for them.
Yes.
That's the problem. And more the candidates start saying, what happens at this point in the election is they want one more proposal and one more plan. And, you know, sort of it's a multiple kind of thing. But the problem is they talk about, well, in an $8.5 billion budget, we can find the money. Well, you start saying that once, twice, three, and four times, all of a sudden, you know, we're talking real money. Secondly, one of the things we have to keep in mind is it's not only finding where you can save it, but getting at it where you can save it. In other words, they could say, oh, we could save money in this organization and in that part of the administration. But I point out to you all, anybody that looks at the Coventry Fire Department and knows how much money we could save, it's not a question of saving it, it's a question of getting at it. And I think they're thin on that in terms of understanding the ramifications.
Yes, and you're talking about the system in Coventry, like some other Rhode Island communities where there are a number of fire districts within one municipality. Scott, as Maureen pointed out, the rub often lies in paying for these good-sounding ideas. How do you break down the Democratic gubernatorial candidates on that front?
I think the differences right now are mostly cosmetic. They're all trying to appeal to the Democratic voter base. Raimondo has become a liberal overnight, very quickly. And if you look at who votes in these primaries, I will take issue with Maureen. If there's 120,000 votes in that primary, Taveras is going to win. That's the average turnout. That's not a big turnout. A big turnout would be 1990 when Bruce Sundland won a three-way where there's 168,000 votes. And I think the reason Raimondo has a good shot is Pell is siphoning off some votes from the mayor, and Raimondo is going to have enough money to do what Obama did, go deep into the data mining and probably do a good turnout operation in the suburbs to counter Taveras' natural advantages in Central Falls, in Pawtucket, and in Providence, where about 31% of that vote historically comes from. But no, I think Maureen's right on the other one, which is simply that people have not delineated really how they're going to pay for these great ideas.
Before we move on to the Republican gubernatorial candidates, let's get a comment from Pablo Rodriguez on the influence of money on the Democratic side. As Scott said, Raimondo is far and away the best fundraiser. Is that going to be decisive in this contest?
Well, we have a history in Rhode Island of candidates with a lot of money coming in third. Money is not all in Rhode Island politics. I think that it helps. It does buy you a lot of field work and a lot of studies and polls and ads, but it doesn't guarantee the election.
What do you say about that, Maureen Mokley?
I say one of the things that Gina can do with the money is increase turnout. In other words, she can have, that's what Bruce Sundland did, put a huge amount of money into pulling people out. And in that sense, the more people that you bring into this system, particularly in suburban areas, the more that helps Gina. One other thing is, as far as Clay Pell is concerned, it's not just Pell taking away from Angel Tavares. Pell is also a suburban candidate. Think about it. I was in Newport today giving a presentation. I mean, he can hurt Gina, too, because he has the suburban base. So it's he can have an influence in both of these races, and I think that's something we have to keep in mind.
And Gina also pulls from Angel Tavares, right, because of all the politicians in Providence that have endorsed her. So it's a really close race.
Let's cross over to the Republican side of the aisle, and as we know, Rhode Island voters have shown a strong tendency to elect Republican governors. We haven't seen a Democratic governor elected here since Bruce Sundland in 1992. So, Maureen Mokley, what do you say about it looks like Ken Block is giving a very spirited challenge to Cranston Mayor Alan Fung. How did they stack up against one another?
Well, I think what it comes down to is Ken Block has come up become very forceful. He's very vocal. He's got a good message. Some of his plans are worked out. Alan Fung is a traditional politician. There's nothing wrong with that. He's got a base. In a small primary, the Republican primary, the ground game is going to be important. So in that sense, I think, you know, there's kind of a wash there. But frankly, in my own opinion, it'll come down to if Ken Block is the last man standing. We have some excellent candidates on the Democratic side. This is a Democratic state. So they're really good candidates, but I think an ultimate victory for them in this case would be a long shot. I don't think the idea that we like to lean on Republicans is a normal reflection. It was really a result of Mirth York winning three times and not being able to get over 40% of the vote. It was less about, you know, sort of partisan splits than it was about the character of the candidates.
Pablo Rodriguez, we've seen Republican outsider candidates win in primaries. It happened when Don Carcieri beat Jim Bennett in 2002 and when Lincoln Aumann beat Ron Mately. How do you see Block and Fung matching up?
I just don't see the matchup with the current candidates in the Democratic Party. Ken Block's $1 billion cut plan, it's really pie in the sky. If you can tell me that you can cut $1 billion from the state budget, when the state budget, almost 60% of it is completely federal funds that cannot be touched and appropriations that cannot be touched. So you can't find $1 billion of waste in the budget. And I think that his ideas, while they sound good on paper, they really are not real. Alan Fung, the problem with Alan Fung is that we saw him completely crash after the ticket scandal in Cranston. I have never seen a politician go from being on top of the world to being, you know, the butt of all jokes.
Scott McKay, as we said earlier, Ken Block is giving a very spirited challenge to Fung, but there's a bit of a perception out there that Fung might be the tougher Republican opponent for a Democrat. What do you say?
Fung is the best general election candidate. Again, Block has never been elected to anything. What he's trying to do is go after the very conservative base in the Republican Party. Now, it's a small election. The record turnout for Republicans is only 44,000 in a gubernatorial primary. That was 1994, Mately and Link Almond, where Link Almond upset him. And Almond won that election without even running one television commercial on any network TV, did it through cable and voter contact. So it's a very retail, almost a club election. What Fung has going for him is that he's got a base in Cranston. It's pretty good. Cranston is a city that traditionally has a decent Republican base, people like Jim Taft, Ed DePreet, gubernatorial candidates historically have come out of Cranston. So I think Fung should have the edge, but Block has money, and I think he's going to go out there and try to get some more non-traditional, maybe Tea Party types who just want to vote against any incumbent or any elected official. And there are those people. They don't listen to us. They listen to talk radio or Yahoo Radio, as we call it. And they're out there. There's some votes there.
Scott McKay, we see how Bloc and Fung are united by their opposition to repaying the bondholders on 38 Studios. What are the key differences on issues between these two Republican gubernatorial candidates?
Well, there's not a lot of huge issues. I do think that Bloc is more liberal on social issues. We saw that Alan Fung was a little reluctant to get into the marriage equality issue, for instance, whereas Bloc is pro-choice and he was for marriage equality. I think the other thing that you're looking at is a difference in style. You've got somebody who, again, in Fung, they went to high school, of course, a classical with Mayor Taveras, and they have a very, very immigrant kind of Rhode Island upbringing. And Bloc is more someone from a different background. He's from business, again, never elected to anything. Both Taveras and Fung are lawyers. So I think there's an occupational difference, the way they view the world much differently.
Pablo Rodriguez, what do you consider the sharpest policy differences between Ken Bloc and Alan Fung?
Not a lot, really. I mean, they both, like we said before, they are against paying of the bonds, and they all think that we can cut taxes, that we can cut corporate tax, and that we can cut estate tax, and that we can all of a sudden make money out of money that we don't have. And it's the problem that I see with all these promises that candidates are making during the primary election that confuses the issue and doesn't speak, you know, truth to power and really speak to the people and let them know that really we are in trouble. We can't be cutting taxes. We have to be in a real, real election. People should know the truth, and I don't think they're telling the truth.
Maureen Moakley, it appears that Ken Bloc has captured the imagination of some Republican primary voters and has at least some degree of momentum. How do you explain that?
Well, I think he is very articulate, and I think he did come up with a plan, and it was a well-laid-out plan in the sense that he pointed out some places where he could make these savings. Again, as Pablo said and I said, figuring out, pointing them out, and getting them are two different things. But I think Scott's right in the sense that in a traditional small Republican primary, it's the ground game that's going to matter. And Bloc has sort of stayed away from social issues in the sense that he was from the moderate party, and they completely rejected the idea of getting into those. He's been drawn into it a bit. He's got a much more liberal perspective, where Fung, I think, is forced to play to a more socially conservative base, and that's what he's doing.
There's also a pro-gun group in there.
Republicans and guns. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up, a look at the fall of House Speaker Gordon Fox, the General Assembly, and the race to replace Angel Taveras as the mayor of Providence. I'm Ian Donis. You're listening to Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio. It's the Political Roundtable edition, looking at the campaigns in this year's election, and we're recording in front of a live audience here at the Providence Athenaeum. Stay with us.